Good, let's make a start. I'm delighted to introduce Jim O'Shea from Dublin, who's going to be speaking to us on pragmatism and scientific naturalism, some forks in the road. Jim.
Thanks. I want to thank you for inviting me and the organizers for the wonderful accommodations and organization. I'll start right in. Hugh Price presents his pragmatism as a globalized, quasi-realist expressivism combined with a deflationary semantics and a kind of minimalist metaphysics. Now, the semantics is modeled on Robert Brandom's expressivist inferentialism. Price's global version of expressivism highlights the multifarious purposes of linguistic activity, but without the traditional non-cognitive contrast between non-representational and allegedly genuinely representational uses of language. What results is pragmatism as a naturalistic functional pluralism about the varieties of ways in which language enables human animals to cope with their multifarious natural environments. Price says about Brandom's inferentialist account of assertion that, quote, "The crucial thing from my point of view is that Brandom explicitly rejects big R," well, I added big R, "representationalist starting point, offering, as he puts it, an expressivist alternative to the representational paradigm," unquote. Now, to embrace Brandom's Solarzean inferentialist semantics in this way is already to leave behind many more familiar semantic paths as roads not taken, but here I want to follow Price down that first road. And this includes, at the appropriate level, Price's across-the-board minimalism about truth and facts. Here I want to briefly consider two main issues on which Price, Brandom, and Sellers — I have a 2007 book on Sellers, and so a lot of follow-up, I'm trying to figure out what Sellers' view is on various things. I want to talk about how those three thinkers diverge in interesting ways after heading down their common normative pragmatic inferentialist road. The first fork concerns naturalism in general, and the second one concerns what Price, following Kraut, calls the bifurcation thesis. Sellers, like Price, combined his across-the-board non-world relational — that's Sellers, non-relational, he means non-primitive word-world semantic relations. Sellers combined his non-relational inferentialist semantics with a kind of epistemic deflationary minimalism about the meaning or inferential role of the truth predicate. Now, there are people here who know more than I do about different options with minimalism and deflationism, but Sellers had something like an epistemic deflationary minimalism about the role of the truth predicate, roughly as providing an epistemic license to disquote. Sellers calls it truth as correct semantic assertability. And about facts, Sellers wrote in A Deflationary Spirit in Science and Metaphysics, 1968, that, quote, "The term fact is properly used as a synonym for truth, even in the most generic sense of truth, so that we can speak of mathematical and even ethical facts," unquote. But Sellers immediately finishes that sentence by adding, quote, "The term factual in a more specific sense should be thought of as short for matter of factual," and he explains that as roughly equivalent to Leibniz's technical distinction between truths of fact and truths of reason. So Sellers got this notion of matter-of-factual empirical truths and facts. Although globally all kinds of truths are understood in the same univocal way as correct semantic assertability across all the domains. Okay, so the second fork, which I'm not going to talk about first, but which I'll return to briefly in closing, concerns Sellers' attempt to embed within the sort of global pragmatism embraced by Brandom and Price an underlying bifurcationist account of the nature of matter-of-factual empirical truths. That is, in contrast to the various M-world truths about matters of morality, modality, mentality, and meaning, for Sellers, ground-level matter-of-factual empirical truths also involve a substantive but non-semantic word-world causal representational correspondence naturalistically conceived. semantics is thoroughly normative per settlers. So you can have a theory of cognitive representation which isn't semantic in that sense. So at the higher level, as it were, Sellers took his normative pragmatic account of truth as correct semantic assertability to hold univocally across the full plurality of truth apt propositional domains. But whereas in the case of mathematics, truth consists, very roughly, Sellers holds, in provability. Now, Michael Lynch and Wright, and there's a lot of complex discussions about how you say truth is univocal and yet how you say it consists in different things. What? Different properties? And Sellers doesn't have any sophistication on that. But he wants to say, with respect to mathematical truth, they're correctly assertable because they're provable. In immorality, truth consists roughly in consilience with certain intersubjectively instituted and impartial norms of action. But in contrast to those, the truth or correct assertability of matter-of-factual empirical claims, Sellers argues, consists in their naturalistically corresponding to properties of and relations among objects in the perceiver's or theorist's environment. He deflates properties too, so he has a long story about this. This is the level of picturing in Sellers, but it doesn't carry a lot of the baggage. And I don't want to talk about anything about the manifest image being false and science. Sellers holds these distinctions in every empirical framework. So at the higher level, as it were, Sellers took his normative pragmatic account of truth as correct semantic assertability. Oh, so I sort of read that. So you have this distinction between the moral, the mathematical, and the empirical. The making of such matter-of-factual judgments is entirely an internal pragmatic business of correctness, as on the Brandomian inferentialist use account of meaning story. But the result of such world-responsive inferential practices, he argues, is a complex and dynamic neurocognitive mapping of objects and uniformities in the environment. And I think you can use a teleosemantic account to... You can borrow a bit of Millikan to say what sort of story Sellers wants to tell here. He's got a late article called Mental Events, where he does this kind of thing. Animal representational systems, he calls them. Okay, my suggestion is at this second fork, it's not clear that Price and Brandom's global pragmatism must entail the rejection of an underlying small r representationalist bifurcation having this general shape, and Hugh is sympathetic to that in some ways, and that embracing it would provide a resource, I think, for responding to some of the traditional hostility to pragmatism. And it also enables a coherent tie-in with a parallel account of non-linguistic animal representational states or mappings based on natural selection. So you get a lot of things that contemporary pragmatists often don't have that are nice to have if you can have them as a global pragmatist. So that was the second fork, which I sort of did first, and I'll return to it again. A more immediate choice point confronts the initial embrace of Brandom's normative inferentialist pragmatism. And this concerns the question of naturalism in general. In his Locke lectures Between Saying and Doing, Brandom's key methodological innovation concerns what he calls pragmatically mediated semantic relations between vocabularies, enabling Brandom to present his analytic pragmatist as a successor to the classical logicist, empiricist, and classical naturalist core programs, he calls them, of 20th century analytic philosophy. And in the book, Brandom distances himself from the core programs in some ways, but doesn't reject them entirely, except in their mistaken respects. An example Brandom gives of what he calls strict pragmatic expressive bootstrapping within this account is the case of providing, quote, an extensional meta-language, the familiar case, an extensional meta-language for intentional languages, as in the case of possible world semantics for modality. I think by strict bootstrapping, Brandom means that the meta-language is expressively weaker than the language that it explicates. I think that's what it is. And then Brandom adds the following interesting example concerning Hugh Price's naturalism. And here's a longish quote from Brandom. Quote, one example of a claim having this shape in the case of pragmatically mediated semantic relations is Hugh Price's pragmatic normative naturalism. Price argues, in effect, that although normative vocabulary is not reducible to naturalistic vocabulary, by the way, I want to see this Price as my Sellers. that people think I get Sellers wrong sometimes in this way, but I think Sellers is Price here. Price argues, in effect, that although normative vocabulary is not reducible to naturalistic vocabulary, it might still be possible to say in wholly naturalistic vocabulary what one must do in order to be using normative vocabulary. And I think that has tremendous implications on Sellers' view. And the use mentioned, the using pragmatically versus explanatorily mentioned distinction is crucial in Sellers. Brandon continues on Price, if such a claim about the existence of an expressively bootstrapping naturalistic pragmatic metavocabulary for normative vocabulary could be made out, it would evidently be an important chapter in the development of the naturalist core program of the classical project of philosophical analysis. It would be a paradigm of the sort of payoff we could expect from extending that analytic project by including pragmatically mediated semantic relations. Unquote from Brandom. But what exactly is Brandom's own attitude toward what he here praises as Price's would-be naturalistic analysis of the use of normative vocabulary as part of what generally features in Brandom's book as the superseded core program of classical analytic naturalism? Not only here, but also in various places in commenting on Ruth Millikan's very different biological naturalism, Brandom offers praise and does not outright reject, but certainly does not endorse the envisioned naturalistic explanations of our normative linguistic behavior. Brandom's earlier making it explicit had presented norms as at once irreducible to the causal order and yet also as non-mysterious from a naturalistic point of view. On the one hand, it is, quote, this Brandom, norms all the way down, and Brandom asserts that, quote, norms are not objects in the causal order, but on the other hand, quote, normative statuses are domesticated by being understood in terms of normative attitudes, which are in the causal order, unquote. Hugh himself quotes these passages to illustrate his point that Brandom seems to vacillate between directly taking on traditional metaphysical tasks, such as trying to say what norms really are, which on Price's view he shouldn't do, and properly naturalistic domesticating accounts in terms of the function of various cognitive attitudes of subjects. But what I'm considering is a slightly different question of what Brandom's attitude is, not toward metaphysics in general, I'm somewhat sympathetic to Robert Kraut's point that he made, but toward Price's proposed naturalistic account of normative vocabulary as Brandom himself describes it. Now, another way of putting this is to ask what Brandom's attitude is toward the idea of a thoroughgoingly naturalistic account of the human subject itself. That is, of the rational being that has the attitudes that serve to functionally or expressively domesticate the irreducibly normative statuses in Brandom's normative pragmatics. On my view of what Brandom's father figure Sellers had sought, he sought, like Brandom, a non-reductive pragmatic account of the normative M-worlds, but one which nonetheless, as Sellers puts it, quote, can be reconciled with the idea that man is what science says he is, unquote. How to achieve this naturalistic reconciliation was the central problem of Sellers' philosophy, and I think the question of whether to embrace a thoroughgoing naturalism with respect to the constitutively and irreducibly normative capacities of human subjects themselves, from top to bottom, constitutes a first crucial fork in the global inferentialist pragmatist road. So at this fork, Sellers, on my reading, took Price's path in seeking to maintain the view, consistently with the pragmatic irreducibility of the M-worlds in terms of which we conceive ourselves as rational social beings, that human beings are nonetheless what science says they are, where this latter claim is understood in a way that I don't think Brandom wants to endorse. Perhaps Price's view also resists endorsing such statements, since in Sellers' hands he takes this claim to be a straightforward ontological claim. But in Sellers' hands, the claim is authorized solely by the explanatory successes of ongoing science and is not based foundationally on a big R representationalist metaphysics. And in my view, a crucial part of Sellers' own complex way of attempting to reconcile the irreducibly normative with the scientifically natural was just what we saw Brandom admire in Price, but from a distance, namely the idea that it might be possible to say in wholly naturalistic vocabulary what one must do in order to be using normative vocabulary. Okay, but when we consider Price's, and so that's one fork in the road. Are you a thoroughgoing naturalist about the normative capacities of the subject itself? But once we look more closely at Price's and Sellers' respective conceptions of naturalism itself, there's another fork down their common road. Price argues for an important distinction between subject naturalism and object naturalism, where object naturalism, as, quote, an ontological doctrine, is the view that all there is the world studied by science. As an epistemological doctrine, it's the view that all genuine knowledge is scientific knowledge, unquote. Now, I take it Sellers is not an epistemological object naturalist in this sense, since he argues in favor of, for example, objective knowledge of moral truths and facts as construed earlier. So it's the ontological question that concerns us here. And even there, I think Sellers is going to want to say there are persons, even though they're irreducibly normatively understood beings. But he does hold this famous quote, the scientia mensura, that at the level of description and explanation, at the empirical matter-of-factual level, science is the measure of what is and of what is not. So he does hold a strong ontological view. Price takes object naturalism to be dominant in contemporary philosophy as an outlook founded on a big R representationalist semantics involving foundational word-world semantic relations. As such, object naturalism leads inevitably to the serious placement problems concerning the M-worlds, which seem to force a choice for naturalists between Canberra plan-style reductionism and traditionally bifurcationist non-cognitivism. Price argues against object naturalism in favor of his proposed subject naturalism, according to which, quote, philosophy needs to begin with what science tells us about ourselves. Science tells us that we humans are natural creatures, and if the claims and ambitions of philosophy conflict with this view, then philosophy needs to give way, unquote. In Naturalism Without Representationalism, Price defends in a sophisticated way the following two theses. First, quote, the priority thesis, subject naturalism is theoretically prior to object naturalism because object naturalism depends on validation from a subject naturalist perspective. And, quote, the invalidity thesis, there are strong reasons for doubting whether object naturalism deserves to be validated, whether its presuppositions do survive subject to naturalistic scrutiny. Price argues that the familiar placement problems arise for object naturalism due to its dependence on a foundationally representationalist semantics that is itself deeply problematic. So I want to agree with Price's invalidity thesis as directed at big R representationalist object metaphysics. And in the end, I also want to agree that the key move in Price's argument for that thesis concerning the priority of our views about language and cognition as crucial to the correct pragmatic solutions of the placement problems. But I wonder whether we might be able to embrace these arguments from Price while retaining a unified underlying naturalistic ontology and resisting some of Price's own radically pluralist conclusions, which in the same article Price describes as follows. So here's Hugh on his pluralism. Quote, without a representationalist concept of the talk, the placement problem puzzle takes a very different form. It remains in the linguistic realm a puzzle about a plurality of ways of talking, of forms of human linguistic behavior. The challenge is now simply to explain in naturalistic terms how creatures like us come to talk in these various ways. Without representationalism, the joints between the topics remain joints between kinds of behavior and don't need to be mirrored in an ontology of any other kind. Subject naturalism imagines a scientific discovery that science is not all there is, that science is just one thing among the many that we do with representational discourse. Unquote. And again, I've noted that for Sellers, science isn't all there is in certain crucial ways. Price argues in Naturalism and the Fate of the M-Worlds that in contrast to this pluralistic subject naturalism, naturalism standardly conceived as object naturalism, quote, requires ontological monism, a single world to be described. unquote. But I think if we hold up naturalism in a somewhat different light, a slightly different take on the priorities involved is possible, while arguably preserving much else that Price wants to preserve. And here I think the comparison with Sellers is again useful. Suppose we ask why it is that we should take a scientific naturalist perspective on the nature and capacities of the human subject in the first place, as opposed to, say, a Platonic or a religious or a magical perspective. Or why is it that the Aristotelian migration of immaterial forms account of human cognition was basically no longer a live option for a Hume or a Kant? One answer is that it is impossible to coherently imagine Hume or Kant's views on the subjects without first the epistemic authority of Galileo and Newton on the objects. It is the independent credentials of the emerging naturalistic ontology that forces the early moderns to then re-examine the nature and possibility of human cognition from the ground up. This is consistent with Price's remark that, quote, if the claims and ambitions of philosophy conflict with what science tells us, then philosophy needs to give way, unquote. But it seems to me that the raising of the ontological placement problems associated with this definitive modern philosophical clash does not require the philosophical assumption of big R representationalism. The ostensible clashes do not primarily arise from bad philosophy, but from striking and independently authoritative advancements in scientific ontology that bad philosophy prevents us from accommodating. It can then coherently turn out philosophically, in light of this ontology, that the pragmatic inferentialist rejection of big R representationalism is the most promising first step toward a successful reconciliation of the hard-won naturalist ontology and the irreducibly normative M worlds, by means of which we conceive ourselves as rational animals. That was roughly Sellers' view, and I think if something like it could be made to fly, it has the virtue of preserving ontological naturalistic monism. Okay. Now, just two pages left here. That's a big task, and I just want to close with a couple of remarks on one task within that, arguably, the small r representationalist bifurcation concerning empirical matters of fact, the second fork, which, as I noted earlier, systematically underlies one region of Sellers' global pragmatism at the normative inferentialist level. In chapter one of the book, our book, Price distinguishes between an internal inferentialist conception of representation and the sort of external causal covariance or tracking conceptions of representation that are familiar from the cognitive science, and I think from teleosemantics as well. On page 23 of Hugh's book, things don't look good for the external conception. Quote, the upshot is a model in which, but this might just be at the higher level, but the upshot is a model in which there is a substantial internal notion of representation, but no substantial external notion of representation, unquote. And the key for Sellers is to have a theory of representation that's not normative semantic. You can have semantics at the upper level and a theory. That's how he tries to wed the later Wittgenstein with the earlier Wittgenstein. You have to read the earlier Wittgenstein as a theory of non-normative naturalistic representation that evolves in the course of inquiry, like Peirce. There's a strong Peircean element in Sellers. But I don't want to depend on the end of science thing, although I think like Charles Mizak, and there's a lot to be said for that kind of view, but I don't want to presuppose it here. But like Brandom's praise from a certain distance for Price's subject naturalist project at the first fork, Price does elsewhere show himself to be more open to the kind of pragmatically subordinated naturalistic tracking representations that I have asserted also lie at the heart of Sellers' view of matter-of-factual empirical truth. In a 2007 talk entitled Expressivism, Pluralism, and Representationalism, A New Bifurcation Thesis, some of which made it into the book, but not this bit, I don't think, Price asks the following question, quote, is there room in this picture for the idea that some subset of the representations in the internal systematic inferential sense are also representations in the covariance environmental tracking sense? Answer, yes, up to a point. I mean, in my book on Sellers, I take the key to be the relations between I representation and E representation, showing how they're interdependent in a subtle and sophisticated way. Price notes that this concession, quote, does nothing to reinflate the metaphysics grounding uses of the notion of representation, unquote, and the same is the case with Sellers' conception of a subordinate matter-of-factual representational level, small r. And then Price adds, quote, on the contrary, if we want to regard a particular class of systematic representations as also counting as world-tracking covariant relations, it will be because we think we already know what lies at the, quote, world end of the covariance relation. That's also crucial to maintain and hold on to that. This is importantly true on Sellers' non-traditional bifurcationist view. True, both the grounds for and the intentional contents of all of our matter-of-factual empirical assertions are entirely determined by our critically evolving inferentialist language games in response to the impacts of the world in perception, in response to Peirce's secondness, as it were. This naturalistic theory of cognitive mapping is designed from the start to be consistent with that globally pragmatist insight. Price is certainly right that it's a common confusion and one with enormous consequences to run the two internal inferential and external causal notions of representation together, but that doesn't mean that having carefully distinguished them, we cannot theorize as to how they might be systematically interrelated with one another in empirical cognition. And so that was Sellers' view at the second fork. Now, that Sellers put view, almost finished now, at any such view at all is a fact that has been almost entirely occluded by the otherwise beneficial and deservedly influential developments of the higher level normative aspects of Sellers' view by the three Hegelian Solarzians, sounds like the three amigos, but the Rorty, Brandom, and McDowell. But just as I think Price rightly presents his own outlook as a third alternative to traditional non-cognitivism and to the metaphysical reductionism currently on offer to contemporary naturalists, so I think something like the combination of Sellers' two turns at the two forks discussed here represent a fourth alternative that should be visible to globally pragmatic naturalists who are looking for a way to find non-reductive location in nature for the normative M-worlds. If such a view could be made out, it would have the virtues of Price's functional pluralism at the normative pragmatic level, while also managing to preserve both a monistic naturalism and a non-semantic bifurcationist account of empirical cognition. So in closing, I noted at the first fork in the pragmatist road that Brandom's praise for Price's, and I've suggested Sellers' attempt, quote, to say in holy naturalist vocabulary what one must do in order to be using normative vocabulary, was only lukewarm praise made from a distance, but the possibility looks interesting and Brandom doesn't rule it out. At the second fork, Price's concessions to the possibility of an underlying naturalistic world-tracking theory of representation, one which might be consistent with a global inferentialist pragmatism, a view I've also ascribed to Sellers, again has the feel of a response to a niggling worry and a lukewarm gesture made from a distance. Both Price and Brandom are acutely aware of the bad philosophy to which these two moves have almost invariably given rise, but I'll take whatever encouragement I can get, even if it's only from sideways on and at a distance. Thanks.